So good to be with you, Senator. How are you?
Now, do I call you Assistant Secretary? Is that okay?
Yes, you sure can. Or you can, you know, just do what we always do and call me Kirsten.
Okay. Say, I know we have limited time here, so I'm going to jump right to the first question. You've been a long-time proponent of innovation and local control. What in that area, what in that space are you seeing done, or are you talking about? I think I know of one, the EIR program, but can you give us an example like that of something that's being done in the state, across the states in the United States, to give them additional ability to do things that are in best interest of their students?
Absolutely. And that's very excited. First, thanks for having me on the show to have a conversation about this. You're right. Two very important things in my life have been literacy, reading as a school librarian, and then as a local leader and a state leader, really ensuring that all efforts and as many decisions as possible can come from people that are closest to the students. And so that's really our major effort and our major push at the federal level now, is strengthening literacy outcomes in schools across America and returning education to the state. That's why I'm really excited. I want to share a little bit about this this Education Innovation and Research Grant. That's what EIR stands for. Just before Christmas, we were able to deliver out 24 new EIR grants before the end of the year. And some significant things that are very different in this round of awards than has previously occurred. So these EIR grants have been around for since 2017. It was kind of a recalibration of what many longtime educators would call the I-3 grants. They were redesigned by Congress in 2017. And what is, I think, really important to note about this round of awards is since the inception of EIR in 2017, only a total of 7 of these awards have gone to state education agencies like a DPI or a Montana Education Department or a Minnesota Education Department. Only a total of 7. And in this round, right before Christmas, 10, I will say that again, 10 of those 24 new awards have gone to state education agencies. That is super, super significant. And I'm very proud of that. North Dakota is a recipient of a $10 million grant. Obviously, I had to recuse myself from the final slate and the ordering, because by the time that I got out there, we had submitted that grant and I was the applicant. And so the assistant secretary, the deputy secretary, actually sent the final slate up. But I'm really happy. $10 million went to North Dakota. One other thing of note that I think is really important for your listeners is the fact that by congressional directive, the authority is directed to say that 25% of the funds must be supporting projects that support a majority of rural communities. So that's our baseline. That's the floor. But this round awarded 65% of these awards, totaling more than $167 million, will support projects in rural America. So it's a deep commitment of this administration, of Secretary McMahon, and all of us working with her, is to strengthen literacy outcomes in schools across America, support rural America in a way that has never been done, and return education to the states. And I think that this grant is highlights all of those. So really proud of that work.
Assistant Secretary Basler, when we look at the definition of rural, is the entire state of North Dakota deemed rural? Because I know, you know, when we talk, oh, Fargo's big, well, it's not big compared to a lot of places. I mean, and we're rural. I mean, is Fargo, West Fargo, Bismarck, are they part of that too, or is it more the smaller than that type areas?
So generally speaking, of our 168 school districts in the state, the majority, I believe, over 160 of those are deemed rural. Mm-hmm. But we do have some that are micro-metropolitan, or I think is the other classification that is used. The IES agency office within the Department of Ed sets those, and they're actually set by statute. Congress sets the definitions of rural and suburban and urban.
Right.
But the majority of North Dakota is, but no, our Fargo's, West Fargo's, Bismarck's would be not be considered rural.
Okay. Okay. So you've been on the job just a few weeks here now since you were confirmed. And, I got to ask Ms. Basler, you were sworn in with the Bible, right?
I was.
What Bible did you pick?
So I chose the Bible that was given to me as a when I was confirmed.
Oh, confirmation.
My confirmation sponsor happened to be my older sister, Candy. And so that is the Bible. In it were both of the programs and prayer cards from my mom's funeral and my dad's funeral. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that they were present. And it was a very special moment for me because all three of my sons, my oldest son held the Bible, but my two other sons were in attendance with me. So it was me, my three sons, the secretary, McMahon, was providing the oath of office and me. So it was a very special moment for a kid from Flasher.
Yeah. So, When you had your previous role with the Department of Public Instruction in North Dakota, you were exposed to, you know, highly to the what was going on in North Dakota, but you had some national prominence too, but not like you have now. You have so much exposure to the best ideas, best practices, and the like. Have you been there long enough to kind of encounter some things that you go, this that comes out of XYZ school district or out of this state really needs to be replicated in North Dakota and, 49 other states or, thousands of school districts? Is there something that has come to mind right away that you go, that is a great idea that we need to share?
Yes. And that's a wonderful blessing of this job is, I was seeing great things happening in our rural school districts across North Dakota, but now to see what Utah is doing, what Tennessee is doing, there were so many great ideas. Again, I'm still just been out there a few weeks. But to see these grant applications coming in, we're running some other grants that we're working with our Office of Indian Education is within my purview as well.
Okay.
And to see what's happening on tribal lands and what is happening in our tribal communities, partnerships with local public school districts and tribal governments, there are so many great ideas. And I think it's one of the things that Secretary McMahon and I talked about initially when we first started having conversations over a year ago, was how we can really lift up those wonderful examples and scale them. I'm headed to Utah early next week to visit with Governor Cox in a fireside chat at Governor Cox's Literacy Summit. And there are so many great things that Utah is doing, that the state legislature is doing, that their Utah State Board of Education is doing. And that is a goal for Secretary McMahon is to ensure she's visiting, she's doing a 50 state tour, and she's collecting all sorts of examples. And that's what we want to do. And we feel that as we reduce the footprint of federal involvement in education, one of the things we can and should be doing while we're still there is to ensure that these great ideas are shared and scaled. And that is exactly the purpose of those EIR grants is to evaluate, innovate, and research. The fact that there is 18 new grant awardees in this one specific program that weren't there before, it really is, I think, an example of our ability to share success across our states.
Yeah.
But we do need to let our states lead.
You were arguably one of, if not the most advanced person in terms of making the seamless transition from high school to college with your advanced placement and dual credit programs, support of 529 college safe programs. Are there other practices that need, in North Dakota or elsewhere that need to be built on or expanded or tried that aren't being done right now to the level that they should be?
Yes, I do. And I think that's such an important point. And you were, as Senate Education Chair, were instrumental in making that happen, the investment for our Choice Ready program and the ability for our students to earn college credit. I think our public is demanding, our families are demanding. College is a very expensive endeavor, and we need to make sure that we are working more closely, that the transition from K-12 to higher ed and to workforce is stronger and that bridge is strengthened. And so it's really the blessing again that I have now in this new work to be able to work with our, what we call the OCTE, the Assistant Secretary of OCTE, Office of Career and Technical and Adult Education. There was an interagency agreement that was signed and announced on November 18th by the Department of Ed with the Department of Labor that will send a lot of detail many of the people that are working within my office right now to labor. And I think having those interagency agreements in place, like the Department of Education did with Octave earlier this year, this summer, that will, I think, allow more seamless transition, not only for the state education agencies that are working to take action in their own states to make that transition more seamless, but I think getting the idea sharing of how can we ensure that our K-12 system is setting our students up for success in a way that will, whether it be post-secondary education, whether it be the military, or whether it be workforce, that it is in a way that is seamless for our students, our families. And so there's lots of improvement that can be done in that area. And that's what makes this work exciting.
So I have a question that was submitted here, kind of about, you know, President Trump as well, you know, made some, had some discussions about looking to change how the Department of Education functions and works and what is needed and what's not needed, you know, and Secretary McMahon is involved in that. Are there efforts to kind of, you know, you've already talked about like the EIR program, which is moving towards something that you think will really benefit, and then there'll be times when you're moving away from things. Are there, and again, you've been here for a few weeks, so not expecting the full answer here, if you want to call it that, but what, you know, what do you see in terms of reconfiguration the department, what they do or don't do going forward? Is there a process in place, or are there discussions, or how is that working?
Yes, so that is, those are the interagency agreements that I had mentioned. There is, 7 of those interagency agreements are in place right now. One has been executed, the interagency agreement from Octave over to labor. We are now, the department, the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education is involved in one of those, in actually 2 of those interagency agreements, one with the Department of Labor and another with the Department of Interior for our tribal education programs. What I think is important to note is that the federal funding, the federal programs that are put in place by Congress will all stay in place. The funding will continue, the support and services will continue, but what will be different is that there will be fewer federal agencies involved when the Department of Education removes its footprint from involvement in state education decisions. And so those are the steps that are being taken. There is going to be a tribal consultation with our tribal leaders on February 10th. So as we put meat on the framework of this interagency agreement, that the details can be done in partnership with our states. But I think what's most important to for our public to understand is that services to students and support and funding will all remain the same. It will be people that are working in different agencies as we work with Congress to determine whether or not the Education Department needs to exist at all. But right now we're focusing on the interagency agreement.
Well, I like what I would consider the streamlined process, because I think there's sometimes, you know, they build up so many walls for people. And I always tell people that I think one of the great things about North Dakota is that it's small, but because of that, it's nimble. I always felt that if I got the right 4 people to agree to something on education, we're most of the way home. If I got you, like Governor Dalrymple, for instance, Rand Kelsch and Leighton Freeburg to agree to something, we were off and rolling in a powerful way. So, I mean, I like that concept about that.
Yep, that is exactly right. And I will tell you that this, what is happening at the federal level or what we're planning to do, is so very similar to efforts and action that I took in North Dakota with my other agency partners. I had memorandums of understanding with, at the time, Commissioner Christopher Jones at what was then the Department of Human Services, has become Health and Human Services. As we collaborated on school safety, as we collaborated on 0-5, we were making our families and our customers bounce between the Department of Health and Human Services for child care or for special education services while their child was 0-3. But then as soon as their child turned 4, they needed to begin to work with a completely different agency, the Department of Education. And all of that spaghetti mess should be happening behind the scenes. We should be coordinating that, and we should not be having our customers or our students and their families or, you know, even their service providers be jumping through and navigating that. And so it's a very similar concept where we are going to figure that spaghetti chart mess out behind the scenes, put interagency agreements in place so our state education agencies, our departments of public instruction across the nation will be working with one or two entities versus the three or the four or the five. We're doing that right now. SEAs are trying to navigate their way between the Department of Labor for our Perkins funding, our CTE funding. And then sometimes the guidance would be different, and sometimes in the grant making system, the actual system that gives us the money, two different systems. We do that for child nutrition with the Department of Ag. The list goes on and on. So what we're really trying to do is make it less bureaucratic at the federal level, so those funds can be sent to the states and it can be less complicated for our state education and our local education leaders.
I know some of the bureaucrats that will be possibly displaced because they weren't needed in that role anymore may grumble a little bit about it, but I think the general public loves that. Anything in 30 to 60 seconds as we close out this interview?
Just, I would say that the Upper Great Plains, you know, the states of Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, your listeners, you know, particularly Western Minnesota, doing some really great things. Keep up the work. I've been always proud of the work that we've done in this region of the country, and I am only continually growing in that pride and confidence in the direction that they're leading. So,
thanks so much. Thank you for your time.